Shirasa with the head. Sprishan, touching. Vivitsu,
desiring to know about him.
The saintly person.
Idam,
the following words. Aprakshit,
inquired.
Mahabhagavataha,
the very advanced devotee of the Lord.
Asura,
although born in an Asura family.
Translation by Srila Prabhupada, there's no purport. The advanced devotee, Prahlad Maharaj, duly worshipped and offered obeisances to the saintly person who had adopted a python's means of livelihood. Thus, after worshipping the saintly person and touching his own head to the saint's lotus feet, Prahlad Maharaj, in order to understand him, inquired very submissively as follows. Text 16 and 17.
Vibarshi kayam pivanam sodhyamo bhagavan yata vitam chaivodhyamavatam bhogo vitavatam iha boginam kaludehoyam piva bhavati nanyata.
Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. Seeing the saintly person to be quite fat, Prahlad Maharaj said, "My dear sir, you will undergo no endeavor to earn your livelihood, but you have a stout body, exactly like that of a materialistic enjoyer. I know that if one is very rich and has nothing to do, he becomes extremely fat by eating and sleeping and performing no work." Purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not like his disciples to become very fat in the course of time. He would become very anxious upon seeing his fat disciples becoming bogies or enjoyers of the senses. This attitude is herein confirmed by Prahlad Maharaj, who was surprised to see a saintly person adopting a jagara vritti and becoming very fat. In the material world also, we generally see that when a man who is poor and skinny gradually endeavors to earn money through business or some other means, and then gets the money, he enjoys the senses to his satisfaction. By enjoying the senses, one becomes fat. Therefore, in spiritual advancement, becoming fat is not at all satisfactory. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaputaya Shri Mate Bhakti Viranta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasutun Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Pasaka Dhyade Sitarne. It's nice to be back in Melbourne. See all the nice devotees here. And a few extra ones too. At least for the first lecture. So here it mentions that we shouldn't get fat. Because I'm sure the ladies know that already. But, and generally, there is a science of getting fat. One has to do certain activities in order to get fat. One of them, generally, is eating too much. Of course, there's persons who eat nothing and they get fat. There's other persons who eat tons of prasad and they get skinnier all the time. Of course, the people who get fat by eating little or nothing, they always envy the people who are eating so much and getting skinnier all the time. So it's not only always true that the amount of prasadam that one eats determines whether one is going to get stout or not. Of course, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna had mentioned, or Arjuna had asked Krishna about the symptoms of a person who is self-realized. He says, Arjuna vacha stita pragyasya ka bhasha samadhi stasya keshava stitadi kim prabhaseta kim asita prajeta kim. So this word for self-realization is samadhi. Samadhi. One whose consciousness is equi-minded. In other words, one who's not either excessively attached to things in the material world or averse to them. That may mean that the person is
on that equally minded plane because he's in a different world, namely the spiritual world, or means that one is simply on the Brahman platform, and on the Brahman platform, one is not attached or necessarily averse. Arjuna is asking, what are the symptoms? And he specifically asks, how does he walk? How does he talk? What does he say? And what is his language? He didn't ask how much he eats, because that will be covered later on in Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna's answer was, Sri Bhagavan Vacha, his first answer, he answers all the different questions. Prajahati yada kaman sarvam partha manogatan atmani vatmana tushtas tita pragyasta tochite. And the word used there, which is quite significant, is tushti. Tushti meaning satisfied. That a person is satisfied by being on a different platform of consciousness, he doesn't invent things for his happiness. In other words, the material world, as Prabhupada writes, especially modern society, generally is trying to gratify its tongue, first of all, and then its genitals. And then the tongue, belly, and genitals are the main objects of sacrifice in the material world. Although people claim they're sacrificing for their country or for their family, actually these things are only sacrificed for because they help either mentally or physically gratify one's senses. So the physical senses of the tongue principally, the belly and the genitals. And in order to figure out how to gratify the tongue, belly and genitals, we exercise our minds in different speculative ways to figure out new ways to enhance the pleasures of the tongue, belly and genitals. Because there's no better way of enhancing the tongue, belly and genitals than to take a lower species of life. That if one takes the body of a hog, then one gets all facility for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Unlimited. And not only that, but no one will criticize a hog for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. We've never heard anyone criticize a hog because it was fat. Or the hog broke the principles. The only principle of the hog is to gratify the senses as much as possible, and then it's truly a bona fide hog. Otherwise, it's kind of, you know, must be some psychological problem the hog has. Too much association with the wrong animals or something. So Krishna says, Prajati yada kama, that one who gives up sense enjoyment, which is manorakata, Prajati yato kama, sara partha manogatan. Gatan means to move around, and mano means that the mind is always moving around here and there, trying to figure out what would this taste like, what would that feel like. The mind is always trying to speculate, what would it be like if only I had that arrangement. And then the intelligence gives us the, if we're really determined to figure out what that would be like, to make all the arrangements, then Krishna gives us the intelligence through his material energy how we can manipulate our mind and senses to really figure out what it's like. And in order to do so, of course, to be enthusiastic, we have to get a false ego. You have to enter into some dream state, because otherwise, if we knew it's just a show and I'm not really going to be happy, then why would we go through all the problems to do it? Because in the material world, there is no real happiness. Sorry to tell you. This is the wrong country to go to. That what is the real happiness of the body, for instance? The body is never happy. All it can do is alleviate the unhappiness of the body. The body is never happy. All it can be is miserable. And when we eliminate some misery, then we call it happy. For instance, if someone doesn't have a toothache, for instance, most of you, I hope, don't have a toothache. That doesn't mean you're automatically happy because you don't have a toothache. No one dances down the street, you know, I don't have a toothache, I don't have a toothache. But if one has a toothache, there's a lot of misery. But then when the tooth, if you go to the dentist and somehow or another he takes care of your toothache, then you feel happy that I don't have a toothache. That famous story the Prabhupada told when Gopal, what was his name? Gopal something. What? Bhan. Gopal Bhan. So one day he was on a boat. No, actually one day the king came over to him and said, Gopal, guess what? Did you hear the good news? And Gopal said, no, what happened? I just have a son. So how are you feeling? So Gopal was saying, I think he said, I feel great. He said, why? He said, because I just passed stool. So the king said, that's disgusting, Gopal. You disgust me. I don't really want to have anything to do with you. So later on, Gopal, because the kings, they had these... The king was very serious business. Previously, it was very... Nowadays, it's not so serious. Because the king had to do... He was actually in charge of the kingdom. And what he did would actually... He had big responsibility. Have to kill people sometimes, put them in prison. He was directly responsible for the kingdom. So they always had these gestures, like Gopal Bhan. So Gopal Bhan, one day, although the king wouldn't talk to him anymore because he was so disgusted by Gopal's answer. So he was on the boat one day with Gopal. And the king said, Gopal. He said, pull over, I have to pass. He said, wait a second, I have to find a good spot. Wait, there's an animal over there, we can't pull over there. And the king said, pull over, I got to pass, it's an emergency. So he said, wait a second, that's not very auspicious, that place is facing the sun. And he kept on going for some time. And finally pulled onto the shore and the king jumped out and came back with a big smile on his face. Gopal said, how do you feel? He said, I feel great. He said, why? He said, because I finally passed stool. So Gopal said, see? And you thought I was insulting you. So that's material happiness. That the happiness of the body is just negative. That somehow or another, we're not feeling pain, then we consider that great material happiness, for the body at least. And of course, there's another happiness of the mind. The happiness of the mind is that when we don't have hankering, then we think we're happy. When we're not desiring something, then we think, oh, I feel satisfied. So we invent things to work hard for, and then we get them, then we feel happy. Of course, if we didn't have them in the first place, we'd be happy. But especially in modern society, because people are so bewildered by modern propaganda, they don't realize how they're being made unhappy by all the advertisements. The advertisements don't give you any happiness. They create unhappiness. And then when you work hard to fulfill the unhappiness that they created, then they call that happiness. And then the nature of the mind is that it always wants something new, because whatever you desire and then enjoy, then you get tired of it. Then you want something new. So they keep on inventing new things, and people keep on buying newer and newer things just to fulfill the desires of the mind. But the mind's never really satisfied. All it does is that the happiness comes because we're satisfying something that we didn't have. And the body is happy when it doesn't get something new. So it's just the opposite. If it just gets the same thing every day, it's like if you have prasad at the same time and this desire is gratified at the same time, then the body is satisfied. But the mind is not satisfied unless it gets something new. Every day something new. In other words, the material life is all, practically speaking, there's nothing positive about it. It's all misery. Either you satisfy the misery and then you call it happiness, or you satisfy the desire for happiness and then you call that happiness. But ultimately it's all miserable. Therefore Krishna says, yada prajahati yada kaman, when a person gives up all desires which arise out of mental speculation, and tushati, then he finds satisfaction in the self alone. Then he's said to be situated in transcendence. In other words, Krishna was not just a pessimistic person telling people to give up all the good things of life, so, and work hard for him. Now Krishna is simply stating the fact that as long as one is on the material platform, the mental platform, or the sensual platform, then one will never be satisfied. And as soon as one gives up the mental and sensual platform, either by coming to some level of the spiritual platform, then one automatically becomes satisfied. Tushiti. And then Krishna says, what is the main problems of becoming satisfied? And then he goes over things like Dukeshu Vamanagmanak, Sukeshu Vigatas Priha, Vitaraga Vayakroda, Stitadir Muni Uchite. That a person is not Dukeshu Vamanagmanak, that one who gives up all mental speculation, which arise out of sense desire, or what is this? Dukeshu Vamanagmanak, Sukeshu Vigatas Priha. One who's not unhappy when he finds distress, or elated when he finds good, is said to be perfectly situated in knowledge. In other words, Dukeshu Vamanagmanak. So the mind becomes agitated, we become distressed. Sukeshu Vigatas Priha. And when our desires are satisfied, then we become so happy. Vitaraga Vayakroda, and this leads to attachment, fear, and anger. So one who's not elated when there's happiness, nor disturbed when he finds attachment, fear, and anger, is said to be a person who's satisfied within the mind. So that's material life, more or less. When we find ill, when there's some problem with the body, then we become very distressed. My poor body. Do you realize what my body's going through? No. No. Well, if I told you, I hope you cry, or else I'll even be more in distress. That no one loves me, my body. No one appreciates the suffering my poor body's going through. If you love me, love my body. If you love me, then love my dog, my body. And do you realize what a great time I'm having? You should have a great time because I'm having a great time. Because my body feels great. I feel great. So this is all due to the intelligence following around the mind, just like a dog follows around its master. Instead of the intelligence taking control of the mind, it just follows the mind around. And the soul feels satisfied. I've done a good thing today. I made my body feel, I've reduced the misery in my body, and I've done something to make my mind feel happy. So I'm a good person. I'm a good servant to my senses and mind. So everyone should appreciate what a good person I am. And not only that, that I've utilized my intelligence so nicely, I was able to figure out how to do it. No one can do it as well as I can. And in the future, I'll be able to do it better. Now I relieved this misery from my body. In the future, I'll relieve the 10 miseries more that were caused by my relieving this misery. So my intelligence is growing. I'm solving so many more problems with my intelligence because as my miseries grow, I'm figuring out how to get rid of them. And my mind is coming up with more and more desires, and my intelligence is keeping pace and figuring out how to get more and more to satisfy the unlimited desires that the mind is just coming up with out of mental concoction. It has nothing to do with reality. As Prabhupada said that he saw in some store one plastic gun or something, and he fell down the ground, started to go into a temper tantrum, I want that gun. And his father, being naturally soft, although his mother was quite strict, bought him the gun, plastic gun. And then immediately fell down the ground and started going to another temper tantrum. And so his father said, what's wrong? I just bought you the gun. He said, well, I want another one for the other hand. So that keeps the business alive, the gross national product growing. Plastic gun for every hand. But it has nothing to do with really happiness. Nor does it have to do with real intelligence. That real intelligence should mean that if we truly want to be happy, We simply have to become aloof from the desires of the mind and gratify the senses what is necessary so we can keep on with the process of self-realization. Or as Prabhupada just summarized it in the verse, Indriyani manobhudira asya dishtanam uchate eteravimohadyatyesha gyanam avrityadehina. As we pointed out this analogy before, just like if a person is walking down the street and he sees a beautiful woman, who he thinks is beautiful, and immediately the mind says, that's the one. And then the intelligence says, wait a second, look more carefully. The mind says, no. You feel it in your heart, don't you? And the intelligence says, wait a second, she has a little dot on her face. That may mean she's married. And then the mind says, forget it, that's old fashioned. Who believes in that stuff anymore? That went out with a belief in God. The new law is, there's no dharma, there's no religion. The new law is, if it feels good, then you just do it. Haven't you learned your ABCs in school? So the intelligence goes, well, I'm a little doubtful, but there was such a thing as laws of nature or something about, you know, sinful activity. Forget it, the mind goes, don't believe it. So the soul, who's sitting there in the body, listening to the mind, desires, feeling the mind's desires and listening to the senses, go for it, don't listen to the intelligence. I'm not going to leave you alone. The mind says, yes, we're not going to leave you alone. And the intelligence says, go, beep, beep, please listen to me. It's not good, it's not good. Why is it not good? Well, I can't figure it out, I forgot. It was Sunday school. Think hard, Sunday school. Something about Sunday. And this all says, well, it doesn't seem like the intelligence is coming up with very good arguments, but my mind, in a sense, is pretty agitated. So then the soul goes, all right, intelligence, do something good, you know, do something useful for a change. Think of a way of meeting her. And the intelligence says, all right, whatever you want. And the intelligence says, well, write her a letter. Tell her you're going to give her the sun and the moon. And if she's really nice to you, you'll throw in a few stars as well. But be careful. Tell her you'll meet her in a secluded place at such and such time. Because she has a little dot in her head, and as far as I can figure out, as far as I've seen, her husband's probably twice as big as you are. So in this way, the intelligence becomes a servant of the mind and the senses. Instead of controlling the mind and senses, it becomes a servant and thinks of plans how to gratify the mind and senses. And then under this influence, it acquires a false ego and thinks it's all very nice. We're doing a great thing. We're actually a good person because we're doing this. And everyone should love us for it, even her husband, as long as he doesn't find out. So this is called illusion. So, and when we're able to gratify the senses, we call that happiness. And when we're not able to gratify the senses, we call it distress, the senses including the mind. So when it gives up such mental concoction, and even the senses are agitated, tolerates them, realizing that they're agitated because of my past misdeeds. And even if there's happiness, one realizes that this happiness is simply some facility given to me so I can do better service to Krishna. That Krishna has provided nice arrangements for my material body, and he's giving me nice instructions for my mind so I feel happy, so now I can perform better service. And then, of course, Krishna says, yak sarvatra nivishtehas tat tat prapyu shubha shubham nivina dvesti na dvesti tatrapa agyapatishti ta. That one who is not elated or depressed when things outside oneself go good or badly. In other words, on the mental platform, we can expand our mental conception of happiness and distress to how can you be happy? The society's falling apart. Don't you feel guilty? That person down the street is starving. You should feel miserable because he's miserable. Because for the devotee, he's paradukaduki. He realizes that the soul is suffering because he's identified with the body. He realizes his real problem is not that he didn't get something to eat. The real problem is that he's identifying with the body, therefore he thinks that when the body's hungry, then he's hungry, or she's hungry. Therefore, this, out of compassion, one tries to eliminate the soul so he gets over his so-called happiness and distress and realizes what his real distress is and what his real happiness is. His real distress is that he's identified with his body and the mind, and his real happiness will be when he identifies himself with Krishna. So that's real intelligence. And no matter what happens externally, just like when I was in New Zealand, probably the same thing here, it says there was a big sign in front of a church, because the church is supposed to teach you spiritual things. It says, no war in Iraq, with a big exclamation point. So I'm sure the Iraqis are very happy that the New Zealands won't go to war against them. And probably they'll be even more satisfied if the Aussies don't go to fight against them either. But maybe they will. But in any case, that's not really our concern. Whether they go and fight against their bodies and minds, all these illusory conceptions that now I've killed him. But actually we haven't killed him. What usually happens is just like the Druze in Israel. So the Druze in Israel, they're Muslims, but they believe in reincarnation, they believe in the Vedas, they believe all these things. Because probably they were Jewish people killed by the Arabs before, and they took birth as Arabs. And the Arabs were killed by the Jews. They take birth thinking of the Jews at the time of death, the suicide bombers. I'm going to kill all those Jews. He dies thinking of the Jews, and he comes back as a Jew. Only to be killed by the suicide bomber. By the Jew thing, I hate those Arabs, I'm going to kill them. And he comes back as an Arab. Then he becomes a suicide bomber in his next lifetime to kill the Arab who was a suicide bomber in his last lifetime. He came back as a Jew. And then in this way, one goes on perpetually going nowhere, back and forth. Therefore, Krishna says, Yadasam Haryate Chayam, Kormangani Vasarvashaha, Indriyara Indriyarte Vyas Tasya Pragya Patishita. One who is able to withdraw his senses from their objects, just like the tortoise draws his limbs within the shell, is said to be perfectly fixed in knowledge. In other words, just like this perfect person, he apparently should have been able to realize that what's the sense of eating so much, what's the sense of sleeping so much? It won't really make me happy. Therefore, that's why he took a jagara vritti. But somehow or another, a lot of people came along, gave him a lot of prasad, and he just ate it. So why didn't he leave it? Anyhow, that's why Prahlad Maharaj is a little bewildered. Why is he fat and at the same time a saintly person? Of course, one has to go through a little bit deeper analysis, which we don't have time for today, to explain that. Has a lot to do with other things. But the point is that that's the dilemma, that if a person is actually enlightened and satisfied on the spiritual platform, then he should be following, as Krishna says, natyashnatasya yoga asti na chai kanta manashnata na chaiti swatnushila asya jagatam naiva charjana yukta hara viharasya yukta chaitis vakaramasu yukta swatni vibodasya yoga pati dukaha. That a person, not yet yashnatas to yogos, yogi doesn't eat too much or eat too little, sleep too much or sleep too little. One who is temperate in his habits of eating, sleeping, work, and recreation can mitigate all the material pains by practice of the yoga system. In other words, generally if you eat too much or eat too little, you get sick. And if you get sick, then the body becomes agitated,
And then the mind starts thinking, my poor body is all agitated. You know, I'm unhappy because my body is unhappy. Therefore, the mind becomes agitated. Then it says, think of a cure. Think of some way of getting rid of this disturbance of the body, etc. And therefore, it's very hard to fix the mind on Krishna with an agitated mind, with an agitated senses. So generally, a person who knows that, he lives a very regulated life. So how is it that this person's apparently eating so much, eating more than necessary and getting fat? Then how much, is this an indication of how much the person is factually on the spiritual platform? It was Prabhupada with Pishima. Pishima is quite chubby. You know, Pishima, Prabhupada's sister. And Prabhupada used to joke with his servants. And he would say, Pishima, she says she's not eating anything and she keeps on getting fatter. So Prabhupada didn't accept that. In other words, although according to Ayurveda, it's possible that you could actually get fatter by eating nothing. If you constantly think of eating something, maybe tomorrow we'll go over that, how you can get fatter by eating nothing. It's an interesting topic. Anyhow, thank you very much. Are there any questions? Any comments? Yes.
In the 13th chapter, Krishna says by all these activities of the body, the soul is not involved and nor does it get entangled. So it is
Anadi vam nirgunadvat paramatmayam avyayam shirira stopikantiya na karoti nanalipyate. That the soul is transcendental beyond the material modes of nature. Despite contact with the material body, Arjuna, the soul is neither doing anything nor is he entangled. But he is entangled. Not really entangled. He's entangled, but he's not entangled. He's entangled by ignorance because he doesn't know who he really is. And his entanglement is due to his desire. So the soul is entangled. Obviously, if you tell it, you go around and say, well, none of you are entangled. So what does it mean you're conditioned if you're not entangled? So Krishna means he is entangled, but he's not entangled. Then he gives the two analogies, because Arjuna was also wondering the same thing. What are you talking about? So Krishna says, Yata sarva katam sokshmat akashana no palipyate sarvata vasito dehe tatapano palipyate. Just like the sky, due to its subtle nature, does not mix with anything, although it's all-pervading. So similarly, Prabhupada translates a little bit different than this. We usually translate the Sanskrit, but Prabhupada translates the Sanskrit as the soul situated in Brahman vision does not mix with the body, although situated within the body. So we simultaneously don't mix with the body, but we do mix with the body. Just like the air, we can't say that the air is not mixing everywhere, or the sky is not mixing with everywhere, because it's everywhere. But at the same time, it's aloof from everything. So the soul, due to his contact through his consciousness, because his consciousness, as Krishna says, yata prakashi yatyekam, kritsnam lokimam ravi, Kshetra, Kshetri, Tata, Kritsnam, Prakashayati, Bharata. Just like the sun alone illuminates all the universe with sunlight, so the soul, situated within the body, illuminates the entire body by consciousness. So because of the soul is pervading the body with consciousness, it experiences the happiness and distress of the body and the mind. And due to that experience of the happiness and distress of the subtle and gross bodies, therefore, it desires in terms of the subtle and gross body, and because it keeps on desiring in terms of the gross and subtle body, it keeps on having to take another gross and subtle body because of its desires. So in that way, it's entangled because it wants to do something for the gross and subtle body. And Krishna makes the arrangement so that the soul can keep on serving one gross, subtle, and gross and subtle body life after life because of the soul's desire. Is that clear?
I just mentioned that it's second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, we recognize Vaishnava by his behavior and by his speech and by how he's situated. So right. How do we reconcile not being able to know and being able to know?
Well, two things. One is Prabhupada said, out of all the different criteria that Arjuna is apparently giving, because if we look at Krishna's answers, most of them are imperceptible. But Arjuna is asking things that are apparently visible. And Prabhupada said, out of all of them, we can tell best the consciousness of the person by how they speak. But we have to be able to hear. Unless we can hear, we can't judge how a person speaks. So it takes some qualification of the hearer to be able to judge what a person's speaking about and how he's speaking. So everyone will judge speaking and what they're speaking about according to their relative position. In other words, if we hear submissively with the right attitude and then we follow, then we will become more qualified to hear to understand what the person's speaking. That's true not only for a self-realized person, but that's true for everyone. Whatever anyone is doing, whatever factually they're accepting and following, then they get to realize what the person's speaking about. Whether it takes them into the mode of ignorance, or into the mode of passion, or the mode of goodness, or transcendental. So it depends upon faith in the hearer and willingness to follow their instructions, and then we'll find out what they're actually talking about gradually. Is that clear?
Well, that was if we're not interested in following the person's instructions, we just want to know where they're at.
Then we'll never find out where we're at. All you can do is judge according to where we're at. We see everything according to where we're at. So we'll look around, we'll think, well, look at that person, just like, you know, he has a spot on his kurta, or give a better example, Ramachandrapuri. He was looking around in Lord Chaitanya's room and he found some ants. And immediately he figured out where Lord Chaitanya was at. He started to think, yeah, he's a sannyasi and everyone says he's real strict, but there's ants here. So secretly at night, he's eating sweetmeats. So he figured out where Lord Chaitanya was at. I couldn't find any fault, but by more careful investigation, I figured out that actually he's a secret sense enjoyer. He's just more expert. So if we don't listen to a person and actually follow their instructions, then we'll figure them out according to our own mental condition. Is that right?
Aren't there certain symptoms that you can recognize for the body without having to necessarily?
Yeah, if you study the symptoms, but then you have to be able to study the symptoms and hear them. So you have to accept someone as an authority that these are the symptoms. And then you have to learn what the symptoms are. Then you have to be able to perceive. You have to be able to be discriminating enough to figure out who has the symptoms and who doesn't have the symptoms. So that takes some training. So one is supposed to be trained up to figure it out. That's most of our training is supposed to be that. To find out whether we have the symptoms first of all. And then if we develop the symptoms, then it'll be much easier to figure out if anyone else has something similar. Is that all right?
Here's a dilemma. We may hear from many people. Some of them are not devotees. We have to work out whether they are or not. And it's the process of hearing which should be able to determine whether they're worth listening to.
Well, that's called Buddha Yoga. We can taste them. We can smell them. We can touch them. We can try and speculate. But we have to hear with our intelligence. We have to try and see through our intelligence. And if we're actually sincere, then it says that Krishna will enlighten us with our heart. We follow the process that Krishna has given us. We have to, by constant service to Him with enthusiasm, then Krishna gives us progressively more and more intelligence. So somehow or another, we have to enthusiastically and consistently engage in devotional service. And then Krishna will give us the intelligence to understand things more clearly. And then all our misconceptions out of compassion, he'll take them away. And we'll be able to realize things as they actually are, not only intellectually, but directly. So Prabhupada says, first of all, we study Bhagavad Gita.
not only Prabhupada says, but that's what Krishna says in the or Śrīla Vyāsadeva in the first canto, second chapter, Śrīmad-Bhāgavatam Svākatā Krishna. We hear especially Bhagavad Gita, and then as we accept Bhagavad Gita that we're servants of Krishna, we become progressively more realized. Bhagavad Gita deals with the intelligence, and then the realization comes from active devotional service as by following the footsteps of the great Mahajans, just like in the Śrīmad-Bhāgavatam.
Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.